Thank you, Bronwyn, for the kind words and introduction. I'm not fantastic at public speaking, and when Alec approached me last year and suggested to, and asked me to join BizNews this year and tell our story, I was a bit taken aback, and I asked him, but why me? Doesn't make sense. And he said, listen, we have enough politicians, we have enough activists, enough fund managers, we have enough bankers, but after all, it's called BizNews. So we need to have someone with a business story to tell. So I agreed. And ever since, you have these sleepless nights. You've got this coming up. So, but actually, it's quite easy because, you know, when you tell the truth and you tell things as they were, it's quite easy. I'm definitely not going to kill you with PowerPoint today, but what we've done is we've compiled a few photos which will spark a debate and from way back, and it helps tell the story of We Buy Cars. When I was a teenager, and I'm sure it's the same with you, you often wonder what your future holds for you. I remember myself thinking, I wish I could speak to the 30-year-old Fawn, or maybe just have 2 minutes with the 40-year-old Fawn, or the 50-year-old Fawn. And ever so often you catch yourself dreaming and thinking, where are you going to be? But in my wildest dreams, you know, I was hoping to have a nice job, have a decent house, that sort of thing. If that teenager could see me now, you would not have believed it. We've been extremely privileged. Lots of entrepreneurs call it luck. I think there's definitely an element of luck involved with this. Recently, we had a conference nearly as big as in this big tent. We had 450 buyers across South Africa come together. We Buy Cars buyers. And with Dirk and myself being the very first two buyers of We Buy Cars, having started the business 25 years ago, it was quite a moment to, for the first time in a very long time, to get everyone together in one space. We were sitting on the Oppie Verhoog, and I took a picture of that. And I told John, a colleague of mine, look at this picture, and he says, it gives him chicken pox. What he meant to say was it gives him goosebumps, but hoenderfleis and chicken pox. So we've had quite a few of these chicken pox moments along the way where you could pinch yourself and say, is this real? You know, sometimes you walk into the dome and you look at all these cars and it just doesn't seem real. The story is to explain to you how two guys who started the business in their backyard with two cars ended up. This is a milestone. Today is a milestone on our journey. We know we're nearly done. We have big plans for We Buy Cars going ahead. So this is a moment where you stand still, you look back, and we're going to obviously move forward again. But how we moved from starting in our backyards with two cars, very little money, to where we are today with 16 huge warehouses across South Africa, housing more than 14,000 cars. It's the story of how we started with 100,000 rand and grew a business where the market cap today is sitting at around 18 billion rand. It's how we spent 20,000 rand a month on marketing in those first years, which was a lot to us. 20,000 rand on marketing, like that, which was in the Bild newspaper. We had to pay, like, I think 500 rand a day to have that on page two. To where today, we're getting closer and closer to spending 1 million rand a day on marketing. How we grew from two buyers to 450 buyers, from 4 staff members to 3,500 staff members. So yeah, that's the story. And to try and tell the story in 20 minutes to half an hour is definitely going to be difficult, but I'm going to try my best. And there's this misconception. People quite often ask us, you had this vision or this big plan to grow a business. And I have to correct them. We didn't. We didn't. We never ever had a business plan. In fact, till this moment, I don't believe in business plans. I quite often get business plans coming across my desk. And I don't pay much attention to that because if you try and plan too far ahead, you're definitely going to get it wrong. I think most big businesses, you can go and ask, they never had a business plan that ended up the way they thought it would be. So some people view us as an overnight success. It might seem that way, but we are now 25 years in the making. And when I look at this 25 years, I sort of break it down into 3 decades. The first decade is what I would call the grinding years. The years where we spend our 10,000 hours, the proverbial 10,000 hours, we got to know ourselves, we got to know the industry, the business, repeat every single day, patiently growing the business, not having great successes, not doubling all the time, but really paying our dues and getting to know this business. So that was what we've done for 10 years. I'll show you pictures and we'll go through that. The following 10 years are what I'd like to call the expansion and scaling years, up until about 5 years ago. We still do that, but that was the focus of that period. And then the decade we're currently in is what I'd like to refer to as the digitalization and information age, where we're currently using a lot of technology to enhance our business. Right at the beginning, so let's rewind to this era. This is early 2000s. You know, if we knew, if Dirk and I knew how difficult it would be to run a business, we would not have started it. If we knew about all the red tape, the bureaucracy, FIC compliance, BEE requirements, accounting requirements, reporting, cash flow, legal stuff, government registrations, how to get approvals to trade vehicles, Secondhand Goods Act, the amount of fraud that's going on with vehicle registrations, labor complications, market changes, all of that. You know, we would have probably be way too scared to start a business. Luckily, we didn't know this. And I don't know who coined the phrase, but there's this Afrikaans saying, "Soos jy stap, verskyn die pad." And that's what we did. We just started this business. It wasn't fully planned, and we learned every day in those years, and we made mistakes, small mistakes, luckily. Never bet the farm. We could carry on, and we did. Now, before this period, I have to stand still for a moment. Before we started the business in 2000, I was dealing cars on the side. I studied to become a teacher, and whilst I was studying, I bought and sold cars. And one day I bought a car at an auction. It was a Hilux Bucky. Very happy. It's my first Bucky. Now I'm driving this Hilux Bucky. I'm going to sell it again, clean it up a bit, advertise it. But I'm not getting lots of calls. People aren't phoning me. And I'm a bit worried. Am I going to sell this Bucky? And you know, the devil, he tells you stories. And I thought to myself, maybe if I turn back the mileage of this vehicle, it will sell better. So I was contemplating this and actually planning to do it. And at that time, Dirk wasn't part of the business. He was busy with his marketing degree and part-time and working. So he came to visit me at Tux, where I studied, and I told him my plan. And I'm not someone who walks with the Bible under my arm, But you see it in Proverbs, it says, the Lord detests an honest, dishonest scale, but accurate weights find favor with him. And we've never turned back mileages. We've always tried to stick to great principles. This the principles we've been brought up with is the same principles we have in our business. Yes, you quite often get things wrong and then you put it right. But those are the guiding principles. That's one of those pivotal moments in our business where we made a decision. This is how we are going to do business. Fast forward to here, beginning 2000, Dirk and I started, okay, now we have to start a business. What do we call it? So it wasn't called We Buy Cars right there at the very, very beginning. It was called Student Motor because we wanted to sell small cars to students that are reliable. But then Dirk, and we are very, very different. I'm an operator-focused person that I know a bargain is on, whilst he's more of a philosopher and a big thinker and a futuristic person. Very few people read as many books as Dirk does. And he said, we got to get a website. Why do we need a website? Really, we got this advert in the newspaper every day. I'm getting so many phone calls. Now you want to go and spend thousands of rand developing a website. So he kept on bugging. He said, okay, let's do this. A few months later, now we've got to think of a name. So he said, okay, well, the website's got to say what we do. What do? We buy cars. So we were so lucky to be able to, at that point in time in 2001, get the name We Buy Cars. And that name has served us very well. We changed the business name to We Buy Cars. So that's where that comes from. Another thing we did right there at the beginning is to have a really, really clear message. If you look at this advert in the newspaper, it's quite striking. It shows our intention without any shadow of a doubt. Quite often when you look at a advertisement, you don't really know what these guys want to do. But I think that message is really clear, and it shows great intent. We've got cash in hand, ready to buy your car. Funny story about the cash later, we had the same picture on billboards, and one day the Reserve Bank contacted us and say, you're not allowed to do that, eh? Because you're printing and reproducing money, and it's against the law. So we had to change the money to our own fake money that we were holding, and no longer to take pictures with real money there. So yeah, interesting story. Dirk and I didn't get along very well. Because we're so different, we bumped heads quite often. But that's also part of the reason for our success. Because there's something called ambidextrous leadership, which means ambidextrous, you write with one hand, you continue with the other, you can do it with both. And when you bring these qualities together, and this is again something that we only realized later on, it makes you think differently. We can question each other. Although we have great respect for each other, we quite often had debates with various different opinions. And I think that served us really well. During these years, we never took a holiday. We worked all the time, very hard, up in the morning, drive all around Joburg and the surrounding areas. We got to know Joburg very well. All walks of life. We saw people selling cars to get money for drugs. We bought from deceased estates. We saw the brain drain out of South Africa in those years because you're buying those people's cars. So we had a first-hand experience of how people just left. We make mistakes. Sometimes you value a car incorrectly because you don't know everything. And as a motor trader in those years, it's quite easy to make a mistake. It's not like today where it's fairly easy to understand the value of the vehicle. You just go online and you have a look for similar vehicles and you get more or less a ballpark. It didn't exist then. I had a boot full of auto traders, the back of the car. If someone phones you and says, I want to sell this car, how'd you like go and do research and find out what the vehicle is worth? So it was difficult, and we learned and we made mistakes, but we got better all the time. Buying and selling cars. Right, I'm going to go to the next slide. Hopefully, I'm pressing the right button. There we go. All right, so that's our very first business card, again with the money and the photo of us two criminals there. And after that, we also put it on billboards. Dick wasn't too happy with us just being on billboards. He then pushed and said, but we got to go to radio. And once we got on radio, he said, no, but we need to. And nowadays it sounds like it's fine. Everyone does it, but we need to do Google AdWords. I didn't even know what the term is. We need to do SEO. Didn't know what the term is. And that's the value that Dirk's added over many years to this business. My mother told me in these early years, when we're now on the radio, the newspapers, and on billboards, she say, Fani, maar jessie, I think you're not fit nou genoeg. I think allemaal weet nou van julle. And it makes you think, are you overdoing it or not? And I think that's probably also part of our success is we've over-marketed and a large percentage of the profits went into marketing in those early years. We spend more than 2,000 Rand per vehicle on marketing. I told you earlier that we're heading towards spending 1 million Rand a day on marketing. But today it's cheaper than then, because if you work it out pro rata. So I'm never someone who believed in budgets. Don't believe in business plans, don't really like budgets. The principle we had was do things in ratios. So make sure that you don't increase your spend per vehicle on staff, don't increase your spend per vehicle on marketing, etc., etc., etc. Then you can grow this business, or in difficult times, you'll have a flexibility to go through those difficult times. And that's what we did. But with these advertisements we had, we were communicating a very clear message to the market. Someone recently told me, the problem with communication is that you think it happened. Now think about that. There's so much conflict in this world, and it's all to do with improper communication. So I think what we've done right is we have communicated a message quite successfully. During this period, we had productive paranoia. So it was the foundation for systems we have today. So Dirk and I are driving around every day in our cars. We had these black books, and if someone phones us, we write down this lead in a book. Little did we know then that was the birth of what we now have as a very, very complicated lead management system with AI built into it and very large data sets. Like, that's just a picture of one of those first billboards there on the N1 near Boerta Avenue in Pretoria Centurion. And I think that the person we rented that from sitting right there. So we go back a long way with Ginger Outdoor. Still today, now we have lots of billboards with you guys, not only this one. Interesting story here. This is a staff photo, probably halfway through those grinding years. And most of the people in this photo is either still working with us or retired. So that's me right there at the back, and Dirk here in the front. And then between us two, there's John Moles, who joined us back then. Used to study teaching with me. Today he's our operational manager. When you look back, you know, it's unbelievable to think where we've come from, where this was the staff component. You knew everyone's name, etc. And then this is a few years later. And this is probably at the end of this grinding year period. So at this point, you could suffer from a condition where you become arrogant. You feel, I've arrived. Look at that. We own this whole building. We build it. Cash. I've employed all those people. personally, we had all these interviews with these individuals, about 200 to put them in the picture. We knew them by name. And this was a point where we could say, but no, we've made it. Because, yeah, we were already starting to make money. You can live a very decent life. And at this point, we did something very interesting. By the way, this is the very last staff photo we've ever taken. Because from here, remember the first 10 years was the grinding years. The next 10 years is the expansion and scaling, opening branches all over the country. It's impossible to get everyone together. So this is the very last complete staff photo of everyone here. But at this point, Dirk and myself and John took a whole 2 days and we went away somewhere and we debated We Buy Cars for the first time. We debated the future of We Buy Cars. We said, but we need to agree, where are we going? What do we want to achieve? And how are we going to do this? Now, I'm sure that all of you read quite a lot, but at that point in time, we didn't realize that many books will be written, not about this moment, but about such moments where you set yourself a BHAG. Now, for those of you who read Jim Collins, you would know that's called the Big, Hairy, Audacious Goal. So this is probably around 2012. And yes, we feel that we've arrived. I'm buying and selling about 200 cars a month. Very accomplished, making lots of money. But what does the future hold for us? Now, compared to the market, at that point in time, it was about 140,000 used vehicles being sold in South Africa every month. And with us doing 200, our market share was minuscule. But we went and we sat down, and after 2 days, we came up with a mission and vision. If you look at it now, you feel, ooh, that could have been written far better. But put yourselves in our shoes at that time. Quite naive, not exposed to the big competitors out there, you know, the Barlows and the McCarthys, I mean, these giants out there. So this is what we came up with. On that day, we wrote, our vision needs to be recognized as the leader in our industry to grow consistently and sustainably and to cherish our relationship with the We Buy Cars team, our partners, clients, and the community. That's a big, hairy, audacious goal. You look at other big companies like SpaceX, Occupy Mars, that's their BHAG. Look at Nike, many years ago, was destroy Adidas. It's what our big, hairy, audacious goal was. And it's such a goal should scare you a little and excite you a lot. And to be honest, you know, we didn't know whether we could achieve this. But I think that probably grounded us once more and said, okay, well, yes, we've achieved something over the last decade. But now we need to focus on this. How are we going to achieve this? And this is the mission. What are we going to do? Fire top quality service. And how do you do that? I say that if a CEO or someone in charge of a business or a department comes to work on a Monday and you don't have three burning things that you want to change for the better this week, then you should vacate your position. Simple as that. Continuous Kaizen improvement in your business. It's got to keep you awake. Create an environment, and this is very important because it's all to do with culture, where people are inspired to be the best they can be. So we'll talk a bit about culture. Dirk is our culture guru. The next one fits more in with me, to be focused and task-driven so that our actions result in achieving our goals, to be highly effective, streamlined. And then the last one, to value the importance of each individual's contribution, because Up to this point, we, Dirk and I, ran the business. But from here, moving into the scaling and expansion, we had to start trusting other people in our business to do our jobs. Nowadays, quite often, if I walk into a branch, a salesperson would walk up to me and say, "Sir, can I help you?" That's what happens. So you don't know 3,500 people names. The culture has now been passed on. The people who we groomed back then, they've now become the custodians of our culture. This is that picture, the goosebump or the chicken pop picture I told you about. Look at that. 450 buyers there in Caesar's Palace. That's about 3 weeks ago. Getting them all together. That's John Mills speaking to them in quite a motivational way. Looking at that, again, it feels unreal. Imagine if the 15-year-old Fawn said, "I want to see the 50-year-old Fawn I showed in this picture." Would never believe that. Right. Expansion. We were very lucky to have been able to purchase the dome about 4 years ago. Largest vehicle showroom in the Southern Hemisphere. In fact, I've been to many places in the world. I've never seen, I've been all over the US, never seen a place with as many vehicles. So I'm not sure if you have, but it could potentially be the largest vehicle showroom in the world. I can't say that it's a dream come true because it was too big of a stretch to even be a dream for us. With expansion, you run risk of losing focus. And we have a saying in our business, and it's very easy, don't be distracted by peripheral stuff, but to stay focused. And we say the most important thing is to keep the most important thing the most important thing. Quite often when we look at our diaries, and I did that exercise with our lead co a few weeks ago, I said, go to last week and just have a look at all your meetings that you had, because it's always busy and always people say, which of those were really productive? Could you have done it differently? If you could have planned that again, would you have done it differently? Did you really need to spend an hour meeting someone from there? Could that not have been done in a few voice notes? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So keeping the most important thing, the most important thing, and that's serving our clients, making sure they get the best service. And where we make mistakes, learn from them and you improve. So, here's. Sorry. This is what we look like today. Branches all across South Africa, buying pods, operation in Windhoek. And that's what the expansion years was about, building, getting facilities. But when you expand like that, you need to get the right people on board. And I think we've made quite a few mistakes along the way and learned quite a few lessons regarding getting the right people. And what we've learned is that you should rather leave a position vacant than hastily appointing someone to just for the sake of filling a position. Because the damage it does in the long run far outweighs just filling that position. Every day we make decisions in a business. Some of these decisions are very straightforward, but some are difficult. And these difficult decisions, if you make the difficulty, you can always say, okay, but no, let's go with that. But there's a price to be paid, not right now, but later on, a year or two later. So my advice is make that difficult decision now. If you have the wrong person in the wrong seat or in the company, it's not serving that person and it's definitely not serving your company. So rather just be upfront and candid about that and move on. You'd be doing yourself a favor as well as the other person. Right. So now we're moving on to the exciting years. I just put this slide on here. What I want to talk about here is the digitalization. So about 5 years ago, we appointed someone called Dr. Wynand Beukes, as head of our digitalization or digital side of this business. And he's really built a very significant AI team of developers, testers, software engineers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we started gathering data. And today, a lot of the decision making that happens within We Buy Cars is automated and data driven. We've taken out emotion, we've taken out biases, and we've learned a lot. So, for instance, here you can see Ford Ranger versus Hilux. Now you start learning things you never knew. When you look at new vehicle sales, the Hilux actually sells more than Rangers. So why do we get more Ranger leads than Hilux leads? So that's the funnel at the top, how many leads we get over a certain period of time. So we've learned that people who buy a Hilux keeps it longer than the owner of the Ranger. Why? We don't know, but that's a fact. So we get more Ranger leads. And then the funnel looks a bit different. At the end, you can see that we buy about 19% of the Rangers. And or what's the percentage? The 18% of the Hiluxes. Why is that? It's because Hiluxes are highly competed for, while people do, or dealerships do not compete as fiercely for Rangers. But then we make more money on the Hilux in a similar price range. The Hilux sells quicker. The Ranger takes a bit longer to sell. Things we never knew. And we have this for each and every make and model. And that informs our pricing. Pricing is no longer a thing for, I think it's worth X. So I think we can sell this car for 200. So let's offer 182. It doesn't work like that. We've now developed it into things like what we call like a CSP. What would be a competitive selling price on a vehicle? Then we reverse engineer what the offer would be. So two vehicles worth exactly the same would get different offers because you have to take these things into account. By doing this, and taking out our biases, we've really improved profitability, time on floor, loss-making units. Having a data set that gets enriched every day, more and more and more data, just helps us make better decisions. So when it comes to AI, we've embraced it. We develop it all the time to help us make these decisions. AI won't take over the world, but whoever uses it to their advantage will. Now, the last thing I want to talk to you about pricing, and apologies for the analogy, but this is the way I think about car prices. This year, thousands of VW Polos will be sold in South Africa. And let's say we take a specific model costing around 400,000 rand. Now, 5,000 of these sold this year will, in a year's time, be 1 year old. So, for most people in this room, you would be able to more or less calculate the value of what it would be worth a year from now. Because you paid 400 brand new, it loses a bit of value right at the onset, and then a year later, they all would be worth more or less the same. Some would be worth a little bit more with very low mileage, great condition, and some would be worth a little bit less. Let's say, at worst case, would be worth 300 and best case scenario 350. So it's a narrow band. And that's easy to price. And that's what most dealers out there do. They deal in these 1 to 5 year olds. We Buy Cars is different. We serve the whole car park. Meaning there's 11 million cars on the roads in South Africa, and we are willing and able to assist those vehicle owners, in other words, everyone, to determine a fair value on the vehicle and provide that service immediately straight away. Fast forward 10 years with this bunch of cars we've just spoken about. Now, one has 500,000 kilometers on the clock. Another one has been kept in the garage and used only to go to church on Sundays, and has only got 15,000 kilometers on the clock. Now, imagine those two owners, they phone their insurance company and say, I want to insure my car. Guess what? They get insured for exactly the same value. It's not right. Can't be. They're not worth the same. Where the value after 1 year differed a little bit. Now the one can be worth 10 years down the line, 500,000 rand, and the other can be worth 50,000 rand. So that's very wide. And that's what we need to do when we price cars, to determine where here does this vehicle of yours fit in. Remember when you were at school, the teacher would say, okay, stand from tall to shortest. It's quite easy. If I task you today and say, everyone here at the conference, you need to sort them from tall to short. It's very easy. We all can do that. But if I tell you, okay, go and sort everyone according to their age, but you're not allowed to ask them or talk to them, you'd get it sort of right, but you'd make many mistakes. I guarantee you that. And that's car pricing. So, I think we've developed the science in doing that. That is where we are today. If I were to ask you what something is worth, let's say the cell phone, what's the cell phone worth in? You all might have numbers in your head, but the moment that I say 5,000 rand, I've now pulled you either up or down. And that's the stake in the ground. And that's also a big part of pricing cars. Sorry, I have to probably rush here. Just in closing, my message to anyone wanting to start a business is stick to those principles, be focused, be patient, and spend your 10,000 hours. Don't be too hasty. Everyone nowadays wants overnight success, and that's a myth. Thank you.
Talk to me a little bit, Dirk, about the culture at WeBuy Cars and how important it is.
Every single thing that you touch on has all sorts of background and implication and ifs and buts and maybes and the whole backstory to every little thing. Back then, companies did have web pages and so on, but the online application part of that web page, that when someone fills in the online application and it feeds directly through to your email, that was brand spanking new. So we perfected the science of online the online application. So it's not so much about the web page, but it was about the online application form and the whole science behind that. That was quite interesting. Now back then, we only just started employing people, and that was a major big step that we held back on for quite some time before we had the guts to start appointing people. This thing is your baby. You designed it. It's what you did the whole time, and now you have to entrust someone else in doing your job that you have perfected. So that was a pretty big step. And if that went wrong at that time, WeBuy Cars might not have existed. We were extremely blessed and lucky that we appointed people that could actually do it better than we did, which was quite something to say. But and then from there on, finally perfected the way of managing those people, and that's a whole story in itself. A question, Bronwyn, that you asked is about the company culture. Now, Jim Collins, funny mention Jim Collins just now. Jim Collins, there's another saying that says company culture eats strategy for breakfast. But Jim Collins went a bit further and he said that company culture is strategy. Now, that is something to think about. And so what I'm basically saying is that recruitment is an art, and your whole business can stand and fall by your recruitment philosophy and your recruitment strategy. So that is something to really contemplate hard. And as far as company culture, that follows from that, but you have to recruit for your company culture. So you need to know who you are and who you want to be. That's extremely important. And then you recruit for that. So you have to appoint people who are culture fit for your company. And that is part of the reason, sorry to say something controversial, but that's part of the reason why Black economic empowerment is a really, really hard challenge. It's very challenging. Okay, as far as company culture is concerned, I just quickly want to touch on a couple of main points. Transformational leadership. It's something to understand what is transformational leadership, because transformational leadership stands as opposed to transactional leadership. Transactional leadership is when you, as the business owner or director, sees people as a resource in an asset, and you see that person as a plug-and-play device. And when you hear directors speak about their recruitment philosophy and the way they're just going to, maybe we should grab this guy and put him in there, and maybe we should throw out that guy and put this guy, maybe this guy, he's going to make that work. No? That's not the way it works. I think the huge part of our success is because we grew the company organically. The financial success grew organically. The recruitment philosophy and the company culture was grown organically. So that has a certain implication for the recruitment philosophy and the way that you see your people, the way you appoint your people. And there's a lot of things here that I can, there's a lot of terminologies and philosophies and strategies and ways, which I'm not going to go through right now.
So Dirk, I'm going to bring Faan in here. And Faan, in your presentation, you didn't touch on the economy. Right now, I'm not sure whether there is any news flow. Are we close to having a budget in South Africa? We're in a closed room right now. All hell could have broken loose by the time we walk out of the doors here. But I'm assuming we do get a budget today. And the economic environment is a tough one in South Africa right now. Give us a little insight into how you're operating in this environment.
God, it's not easy. But when I listen to the speakers and you turn on the news, there's a lot of mud being thrown around and bad mouthing. This politician can't say a good thing about that politician at all. And we weren't brought up that way. My mum told us, if you can't say anything good about someone, then you keep quiet. It doesn't sit well with me when politicians say, that guy, he's so bad, and this guy is so bad, And then later on, being public servants, they need to sit in committees together and run this country, serving us. But now you've bad now this OPHC. So it's something about government that, and politics that I really don't like, I just want to quote Proverbs again. In Proverbs says, a gentle answer stirs away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. We're stirring up a lot of anger in South Africa between politicians, because it's all about them. It's all about
how can I improve my own situation? It's not as focused on the really improving the country.
I think from a government perspective, they're really missing the boat in the sense that in a business, there's something called PAT. You all know that, profit after tax. And we all have shareholders, and we all love to declare dividends. But we cannot declare a dividend if we haven't paid our tax, which sits at around probably 28 to 30% in a business like ours. So it's a lot of money that goes to governments. But government don't realize that I'm the biggest shareholder in each and every company in South Africa. And therefore, I've really got to make their lives easier. And as business owners, that's exactly the opposite of what we experienced.
Yes, there's a little bit of hope here and there. But for instance, when we're building a new site like we're doing in Cape Town, the process of just getting plans approved,
it takes 6 months to a year just to get the wheels rolling in terms of dealing with RTMC, Road Traffic Management Corporation, or little things like that, that could be so much better. Now, outside of We Buy Cars, look at the ports, for instance. That's really, really difficult doing business. And the government realized that our coffers would be far fuller if we looked after these businesses. That would solve the problem. Because when that tide comes in, all ships will rise.
and but they just don't get it, or they don't care.
Well, let's hope that it is the first statement that you made it there. I'm going to go to the audience in just a moment. But Dirk, you beautifully articulated the culture within We Buy Cars. Can you give me a little more insight into marketing as a success driver? Obviously, in Fon's presentation, it was front and center right from those early days in terms of the newspaper advertisement. But in your ecosystem, 25 years old, the importance of marketing, and again, looking at that 1 million rand being spent almost daily in advertising and marketing. Over to you, Dirk.
Okay. I think a turning point in our business was the day when, in the very early days, when we were still very, very small. In the beginning, we were just bargain hunting. The car buying was just bargain hunting the whole time. And then at a certain point, we realized that although we are doing bargain hunting, the person whose vehicle we are buying considers it a service that we are buying their car. Now, you really have to think long and hard on, you know, it's when you are there to negotiate with the guy on the client on the price of his car, you are there to buy the car. And when we realized that some people consider it a service, then the whole mind changed. Everything changed there, and then we realized that we need to start thinking differently of this business of buying cars for the purpose of selling them on for more and making a profit. Now, today we say you make your money on the buying side. You don't make your money on the selling side. But when we realize that, and also coinciding with the fact that there was a scarcity of vehicles available to buy on the premises that we started out as bargain hunting, and then we made a mind shift and decided that you need to reach these vehicles before the rest of the topic finds out about the availability. And then because we coincide with the realization that we are providing a service, then 2 + 1 = 2, we can advertise the service of buying your car and reaching the customer before they go to markets. That was magic. Then we started the small ad that Fani showed you initially, and people were phoning and we were filling in, and that's the deed. You put the deed in the book. And from there on, you know, you read up and you study on lead management and lead funnels and lead nurturing. Those are very, very important concepts that flowed from that onward. And then we also made a very good decision to keep the advertising budget a specific percentage or like Pani said in the beginning, the ratios. We decided to just allocate a certain percentage monthly to advertising, and we just stuck to it right from the beginning. We never tried and take a chance and have it. We don't advertise this month. If you don't advertise this month, you will still have a good month, but the month thereafter is going to catch up with you. And that's where the Lord added. And we just kick it on the ground and growing and growing the advertising very beautifully.
I have got 7 minutes. I've got 6 minutes left on the clock. I know there is a burning question there. There's a burning question there. Why, there we go. Right. Let's go.
Thanks. Hi, can you guys hear me? Yeah, there we go. I actually had two, but maybe I'll try and cut it to one. The first question is, how did the transaction capital investment in We Buy Cars, what did that do for your business? And that's probably a complex question. I don't know if that's somebody. I see that Mark Lamberti is in the room, so maybe I should also don't hold back on that one. That was the first one, and if you don't want to answer that one, there's the second one is, We always hear about people buying, you guys buying cars. Everyone, I know lots of people that you bought cars from, but I've never met anyone that's bought a car from you. So I don't understand that side of the business, because we always talk about buying, but those cars must go somewhere. Where do they go?
Great. I'm going to take another two questions from this side of the room, and then we'll move the mic over there. While that's moving, go ahead.
All right. Okay. So firstly, transaction capital. So I didn't touch on shareholders along the years. So TC wasn't the first deal we've done. In fact, I think it was in 2012 or 13, we sold a minority stake to a company called Fetch Capital, and that brought in another level of responsibility, because now you've sold a bit and you need to look after that interest. So we were even more focused. From there, we were approached by Naspers. I don't know if you recall, back in the day, we did a deal, or were going to do a deal with Naspers. I was very disappointed, putting a lot of effort into that. Only two years later, I had the Competition Commission rule against this deal. Back to square one, then COVID came, and within we were approached.
Juan, so I am going to start jumping in on timing here. So on transaction cap, so I'm just giving that gentleman the right of response on that. And then if you can move to the we sell cars, because I want to get another question in from the side of the room. Otherwise, we're going to have a riot, because we've also got to go to this side of the room.
I'll be very quick. TC was good for us. We learned a lot. It prepared us for being listed, because TC is a listed entity and we had to adapt to that listed routine. So from that sense, very, very good. Not a great culture fit for us, which we learned afterwards, but a very good learning curve. As far as the selling is, yes, it's all in the name. We buy cars, but obviously we have to sell these cars. About today, about a third will get sold to the industry or trade. So we have a very good relationship with dealers out there, and the balance being sold to the public. We put a lot of effort into changing that perception. Sometimes people ask me, what do you do with the cars you buy? I say, no, we just keep them. but yeah, a lot of effort is being put into that.
Gentlemen at the back, one question, please. Thank you.
So there's been a lot of talk about company culture. And my question is, you talk about the three decades, and it's specifically on your head office. As the time goes by and you start off as a small business and you grow, did you hire more of the same as you guys were, or did you embrace diversity from the beginning? And I think maybe let's talk along, let's say, language. You guys are both Afrikaans, culture and religion. Like, did that change over time, the people that you hired, or was it quite diverse from the beginning?
Thank you. If we can move it over there, go ahead, Fun.
Yeah, I think that one of those initial pictures tells the story. We were quite diverse from the beginning, and many of those individuals in that picture who back in the day were just drivers on our senior management within the business. We hold our business meetings in English, because we have quite a lot of English staff members. So from that perspective, I think we have done well. Regarding company culture, as Dirk said earlier, there's these two camps of philosophies, and I won't do it justice right now, but some people see the culture as we're a team. And for you to be a member of this team and to run out onto the field, you have to be on a certain standard. Otherwise, we drop you from the team. And that's important in the business. You know, you have to be worthy of your position. But at the same time, we refer to ourselves as a family, because the family's got care in there and you look after each other. So we're a bit of a hybrid in that regard. But what we're trying to do is to hire people who can challenge us. We don't want an echo room. We want new ideas. Just like Dirk and I fought over the years, you should see our board or our meetings. You know, it can be quite hefty at times, but we keep respecting each other.
I'm going to take the question from here and then a question from the back, and then we're going to wrap it up. Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. Really enjoyed it. My name is Tebogo Ragowana. I'm from the Free State. I've got a question that I think a lot of entrepreneurs, it's called the Death Valley stage, where you're growing, but you're not making that profit. How did you guys overcome that stage? And what's the advice to entrepreneurs facing that want to give up? You're growing, but you're not seeing any profit, and you know the problems are coming. Thank you.
Yeah, we knew that, and this is another thing I didn't touch on. I actually need 2 hours. But we did a recon and stock count every day. Every day.
I'll ask Dirk, how much cash do you have in your bag? He'll count it. He's got 40,000 rand. I'll check mine. I've got 50,000 rand. Then I go on to the bank, and this is how much we have here. We've got a little Excel spreadsheet. These are the cars. This is the cash. This is what we bought yesterday. This is what we sold. This is the amount. And we do that until today. No longer on Excel, but it's there. We're every single day. So we're never oblivious about what's going on in the business. We know exactly where we stand. And that keeps you honest, because you can't buy cars if you don't have money. So you have to either drop your prices on the cars you have in order to get money. So, you know, the first loss you take is the best loss. Get rid of this car. Go and buy something else. Don't try and salvage a dead horse. That's how we did it. And we kept all the profits in the business. We never, ever declared a dividend until about 7 years ago. Everything stayed in there. We only paid ourselves enough so that we could survive.
Mr. Haystack, I know I'm stealing 2 minutes from you. I've got 1 minute for the question and answer. Thank you. That's...
Guys, you're clearly obsessed with your customers. I sold my car using WeBuyCars last year, and one of the best things you did was an instant payment. What can you talk us through the story of when you realized that paying your customers on the spot instantly was a huge value add?
Fine, you've got 40 seconds to answer, sir.
It's all to do with trust. We say we have millions of rands lying in the street at any given moment where we've already paid for a car, but you're only going to collect it a day later. We've never, ever lost money in that way, because we learn who you can trust and who you can do that with, and you pay for the car immediately. In fact, we've developed software to just make it instantly, because quite often when you deal with banks, they say, no, it's an immediate payment, but then you've got to sit there and clock watch and you wait 10, 20 minutes before the money's there. So we've developed our own software integrated in with banks, and it's really, we put a clock to it, it's 7 seconds, so it's done, regardless which bank you are with.
And Faan, that's the perfect soundbite. Thank you so much. Faan van der Walt and Dirk van der Walt joining us.
You can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh la la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Downings is South Africa's leading marquee infrastructure company, proudly celebrating 25 years of excellence, renowned for creativity, innovation, and unmatched technical expertise. Our event marquees and semi-permanent structures elevate any project with style and sophistication. Whether it's a corporate event or a commercial project, we tailor every structure to meet your needs with world-class precision. Visit downings.co.za to consult with our expert team. Downings, your trusted marquee specialists nationwide.